Hey, it's George Cambyses Jr., and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor. Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senores and senoritas, and welcome to episode 207 of your favorite podcast, Walking the Floor, with your host right here, this guy, Mr. Chris Shiflett. Hope you guys all had a wonderful holiday break. Mine was fantastic. Played some gigs. Played up in Santa Barbara at the Soho. Hometown holiday hoedown, or whatever we called it. And it was really, really fun. Saw lots of old friends. Jammed with lots of old friends. But wouldn't you know, that old Omicron put a big old dent in attendance, man. I swear to God, like half the people that bought tickets showed up. So maybe it was a little reckless that we did it. I don't know. I wanted to do it. It was fun. It was the holidays. It seemed like everybody that was there had a good time, and I didn't hear about anybody getting sick or anything from afterwards. So, you know, I think it was a success. And we're going to do it again next year. So look for that. We'll put together another show. I want to make this an annual event. Every year in Santa Barbara around the holidays, the hometown holiday hoedown. We did that on the 30th, and then New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, we got to open up for my buddy Donovan Frankenrider down in San Juan Capistrano at the Coach House. Those were also great shows, but somehow I thought New Year's Day was like livelier and kind of better than New Year's Eve. Go figure. Who'd have thunk it? So anyway, the band is up and running. Sounding good, feeling good, and hopefully we'll get some more shows put together here soon, but probably not real soon, because, I don't know, COVID's fucking everything up again. Gotta wait till that shit dissipates. Anyway, let's talk about our good friend Zounds.com, your one-stop shopping for all your music gear. Did you know that Zounds has easy payment plans to make gear more affordable? So you get the gear you want today and pay for it over a period of months, because everything is costing more these days. You don't want to let those increased costs prevent you from owning the gear you want, right? So buy your gear from Zounds using one of their easy payment plans. All right, Zounds.com. Let's get on over to today's interview. All right, I got to talk with George Cambyses Jr. about a month ago, which was the week after he had shocked the world of boxing by upsetting Teofimo Lopez. Teofimo Lopez was the guy that beat the guy that beat the guy. And now George Cambyses Jr. is the king of the division. It's the hottest division in boxing, with like Devin Haney and Tank and Garcia, Lomachenko, Lopez, all these guys and a bunch of others. Lots of great fights to be made, and Cambyses Jr. is definitely in the driver's seat. Super cool guy, working class fighter, came up the hard way in Australia, in the fight scene down there. And like I said, this is the week after the biggest fight of his life that he won, and he was already back in the gym, bruises and all. So I think that says a lot about who this guy is. This was a lot of fun. This is George Cambyses Jr. on Walking the Floor. Let's just jump in, man. Your head must be spinning this week. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. A lot of media, obviously, coming off that great win. But, you know, I stay focused. This is part of the game. And I've envisioned this for a long time. I've manifested it. I knew I'd be champion, you know, many, many years before I actually become champion. So, you know, it's great. It's part of the game, and I'm enjoying every moment of it.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, man. I'd never seen you fight until last weekend. And I mean, I imagine you're hearing some version of that from a lot of people. So before we get into all the fight stuff and who you want to fight next and all that kind of stuff. Give me your quick history. Like, where'd you grow up? Where are you from? How'd you get into boxing? All that stuff.
Yeah, look, I grew up in Sutherland Shire in Sydney. And, you know, I was an overweight kid. I was bullied at school. I'd come last in everything I did. And it came to a point where I was playing rugby and I had to lose that weight. I had to, you know, take myself to a different place if I wanted to succeed in that chosen sport I was doing. So at 10, 11 years of age, we chose to go to the boxing gym and, hopefully it would help with the weight loss and the bullies as well at school.
With weight loss, like that's
I was weighing 135 pounds at 10, 11 years of age, and I'd come last at anything I did, and I needed a change, and that's where change started in that boxing gym. So I went to the boxing gym. I fell in love with the sport the first day, and after that, I had my first amateur fight about a year later. I lost all that weight. My footy career got a lot better as well, but it got to a point where I got to a crossroads where I needed to choose which one I was going to put my all in, my 110% in. And my love for boxing was too big right then. I absolutely love the raw combat of it. So I chose to take the road with boxing, and ended up having 100 amateur fights. Got to a point where it was time to turn professional at 18 years of age. And, the rest is history after that, fight by fight in the local scene in Australia. I made my mark, and, I started winning all the belts. Back in Australia, the Australian title, the state titles, the regional belts. And then it got to a point where I had to come back. I had to come over to the US to, match it with the big boys, the big fishes.
Sure, sure.
See if I could actually make it, in the sparring sessions, in the gyms. And, I got thrown in there with some serious guys, some guys that were former champions at that stage. And, they wanted to test me, but I passed. And I passed with flying colors, and I knew that I belonged, and that's where the door started to open. My opportunities were there, and I ended up going as a sparring partner for the great Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah.
All doors open there. And, then I got my opportunities to fight a former world champion in Mickey Bay in Madison Square Garden in 2019. And I got my eliminator against Lee Selby in his hometown as well, to be able to become the mandatory to, the champion, which was Lopez at that stage. And, after a long road, I finally got my shot last Saturday against Lopez for all the beautiful belts and all the hard years, all the things that they go through.
So I didn't realize that. So you'd already fought at Madison Square Garden before last weekend.
In 2019, yeah.
Interesting. So were you comfortable? Were you comfortable in there? Because I was thinking about that. You're going into this fight, you're in, here you have Lopez who defeated, a guy that, lots of people think is like the best fighter in the world at the time. A lot of hype. He's got the belts. You're in his hometown. You know there ain't going to be no home cooking if it comes down to that for you. But so having fought there previously, did that give you a little bit of like a mental edge of comfort level?
It did, because I knew the surroundings. I knew everything because I had already been there in 2019. And, when the fight got made there again, okay, beautiful. It's my destiny, because after that great win, in 2019, I said the next step, I fought here in Madison Square Garden. It's a dream for every fighter to fight there. But the next step is to headline, to be here and headline. And, my room hopefully will be I fight for a title here. And that's what happened. I manifested that again. Another thing that I've manifested. And I knew that when it got made there in his hometown, okay, this is the one. This is beautiful for me. And I loved it.
What's that like going into that fight, knowing you're not the A side, knowing obviously your life is boxing, you're a fan of the sport, what the sort of the business dynamics of it are, and what role they think you're playing that night. What is it? How do you approach that? How do you game up for that?
I absolutely thrive on being the underdog. I thrive on being, the guy who's not meant to win, just making up the numbers. I love that, because throughout the fight week and the media, I change it. I become the one that's been talked about, that look at how confident he is. Look at the way he's saying things to the champion. And all of a sudden, I start to turn things around, because I'm so sharp with the mental side of things in the fight game, where they're talking about me and I become the A side and more eyes are on me. But I knew that would be. I knew that they would be there ready to take my head off. But I've been there many times where I've been booed. I haven't been the favorite. I've been the underdog. So when I walked inside that arena and I stood on that ring about to get inside them ropes, I stared at the crowd and they were booing. But in my head, I said, okay, you will boo now. But by the end of this fight, you're going to applaud. You will be on your feet. And that they did.
I mean, when he came out just throwing wild in that first round, were you like, ha ha, it worked. He's playing it. He's doing what I wanted him to do. I mean, were you shocked when you knocked him down that round like everybody else?
No, I was not sure, because I knew that was coming. I had said it, to my team and to a few interviews prior. I said that I will catch him early. You watch. I will get his respect straight away. And that's what I went in to do. I saw the mistakes. I saw him coming in crazy. You know, he was very emotional. And I stayed smart. My reflexes were super sharp. I landed some really good shots, you know, as we were exchanging. And I saw the moment, a shot that I have practiced for many months. And I took the two steps backwards. On the third step, you know, I launched that lightning right hand. And a beautiful clean shot right on the button. And I'm so happy that it didn't knock him out, because if I put him away right then and there, they would have said, oh, it was a lucky shot.
Right.
Show the adversity that I had to go through to be able to continue winning the rounds and banging the rounds. And then all of a sudden, I lost my composure a little bit. And, you know, he came back a little bit and put me down. But then I got to show how great I am and finish the rounds 11 and 12. Unbelievable. So, you know, I'm so happy the way the fight went. And again, a split decision, you know, it was nowhere near that. But again, it was part of the road and the journey and the story that the world saw.
Well, I was really like kind of proud of boxing, because boxing gets those moments wrong so often. And considering the fact that it was in New York, when it went to the decision, I was sitting there, and I know a lot of people felt like that, like, oh, fuck, are they going to rob this guy? And so I thought that was a great moment for boxing, yeah, that they got the decision right.
Yeah. On that weekend, not only we gave, you know, a fight for, that the whole world is talking about right now. That was a fight of the year. They made the right decision. You know, the fans were going crazy. They loved it. You know, boxing really won that night. And this fight took a long time to make. So it was only right and only fitting that we gave a fight of the year, you know, for the length that it took to make, with all the dramas and the delays and the postponements.
Do you study a lot of tape going into it? Like, was there something in Teofimo Lopez's game that you saw that you thought you could exploit? You know, like maybe like him being sucked out with the weight or what? Just, you know, technique thing. Was there something that you saw in your preparation that you thought you could take advantage of?
Yeah, we study a lot of tape. We see a lot of early fights. We see a lot of the recent fights, and we start to pinpoint and break down the fighter. There were a lot of mistakes there. I could see him. You know, the holes were very open. I said it, you know, so many times that there are the holes that the world doesn't see, but me being such a smart fighter, I see them and I will execute and pinpoint and pick him apart. You know, the jab, the lazy jab where I could throw my shots, you know, the body work I could get on the inside, the combination punching. But I knew my style. I knew what I believed in. I knew what I brought to the table. I knew that my speed, my combination punching and the volume I brought and my angles and my ring smarts, my distance, the timing, you know, and my explosive power, you know, would be too much for him. And you know, it's too much for any lightweight in the world. And just like Lopez, you know, they all will find out eventually the hard way.
Well, it's interesting with Lopez. I was thinking about this after the fight, you know, because he beat Lomachenko and beat him decisively, I thought, you know, he handled him.
Yeah.
Especially in the first half of that fight. I think that it's easy to forget that he's only had, you know, 16 or 17 fight. I think the fight last weekend was his 17th fight, which really isn't a lot of fights, you know, like you're still evolving as a fighter. And I think he's a, you know, he's a world-class fighter, no doubt. And I'm not trying to say he's overrated or anything, but like, did you feel like he had gotten too much credit for the Lomachenko win?
My thing was, you know, he had 16 fights, but he was fast-track very fast. You know, they moved him and maneuvered him and put him in positions where, you know, he beat Nakatani for the eliminator. Obviously, he was making a lot of noise before that, where he was knocking everyone out. But then he beat Nakatani, then he knocked out Richard Comey, which is no easy thing, especially in the second round. Right. And that was the same night at Madison Square Garden. We fought on the same card. So there's more and a road that I knew that we were going to meet up eventually. And then he handled Lomachenko like nothing, you know, very, very good fight. But I knew that he hadn't been in the trenches. He hadn't been, you know, where I had to go. You know, no big promoter behind me. You know, I've come from the local scene, the local show. Now, that there builds character and confidence. And that's what walked me to that next level. I knew that when I got to it in a dogfight, in a fight where, let's see who's more hungry. Let's see who wants it more. That old and my hard work that I put in, you know, showed on the night as well.
Well, because you just don't know how a fighter is going to respond until you see them in that moment. And that's like, that's the risk of fast tracking somebody, you know, to be at that fighting for titles and stuff at such an early point in your career.
And the big thing is too, that it's hard to gauge until you're actually in there with him. You know, they said, okay, he's very fast, but there's no power. You know, he doesn't do this and that, right? But when you're in there in the ring with someone, and all of a sudden they're throwing shots and you can't catch them, and they're moving in and out and they're creating the combinations and the angles, and all of a sudden they've got explosive power as well, you know, and their ring IQ and their timing and their precision is all there. That there breaks a fighter because they're not expecting. And again, I go back to The Art of War by Sun Tzu. You know, it's not only the deception of war, the war of deception. You know, war is deception, but it's the you know, being able to shock your opponent, you know, that where they don't expect it. They don't think that he's going to bring that out. He doesn't have that in his artillery, but then you show it. That there mentally, not only physically, but mentally breaks a fighter. And that's what I did throughout the whole fight. Even when he put me down in round 10, he didn't think, you know, I'd come up and rise again. You know, minute 45, he stops any other lightweight in the world at that situation and that position.
Well, that's really interesting. And like with the size disparity between you two,
because
he's huge and he's known as being a huge puncher. And yeah. So to me, sitting on my couch watching it at home, I had the sense that you could have fought a perfect fight. You know, to my mind, you're winning the fight, you know, and it's going along. But I was sort of conscious of like, you could have fought a perfect fight and still gotten knocked out in the last minute of the 12th round. You know what I mean? That was a very real risk with the way that that guy can punch. Yeah. Are you thinking about that while the fight's going on, or are you just in the groove and reacting?
No, you never think of that, because if you're thinking about you're going to get knocked out, everything is going to be hesitant. You're going to be, your punches won't be there. You're going to be intimidated. And that's what I did to him. I caught him early where he was intimidated and thought, this guy can knock me out at any minute.
So, and that's one of the hardest things in boxing that I think people that have never boxed don't understand, how hard it is to get hit and throw right back. And that's what you were doing all night.
Especially in that round 10, you know, and that round 10 was my mistake. I could have kept boxing, staying sharp, but I got a little bit excited for the fans and, you know, I try to close the show, you know, but it's all part of the fight. It's that Rocky story where you get put down and you rise again. And, you know, like I said, a minute 45, you know, I composed myself. You know, I got my legs under me. I fired some shots back. And then I finished the round strong. And I know for a fact he went to that corner for round 11. And he said it to his team that this guy's made of steel. I can't put a dent in him. You know, and I knew psychologically that would break him. And I came back to my corner and I was laughing and smiling. And my coaches, they said, why are you laughing? Why are you smiling? Are you okay? I said, yeah, because now I'm going to punish him for the next two rounds. Watch this. And that's what I did. Round 11 was brutal. Split him open. Shots after shots, and then round 12 closed the show.
I mean, have you watched the fight? Have you sat down and watched it and analyzed it?
No, I still haven't watched the fight properly.
Oh, for real? Oh my God, you got
to
watch it.
What I'm trying to do is I think I'm going to wait till I get back home to Australia and have all my close friends and family put it on the big screen and, you know, just that feeling of trying to live the moment again with all my friends and family and pretend like it's happening right then and there. I think that's what I'm trying to get. That's why I have not watched the fight yet. I've seen obviously the knockdown and all the other bits and pieces when I got knocked down, but I'll wait. I think I'm going to wait and watch it with my loved ones.
He got some really bad advice between rounds. I will tell you that. Shockingly bad advice.
I have heard. But again, that's on him. That's on him. Again, you know, my team is so sharp. We are business. We're professionals. What we do from the minute the fight is made to, you know, the minute we get our hands raised until after that as well, with everything we do, you know, we stay true and professional. You know, it was going to happen, you know, they were going to be found out. And, you know, it took an ultimate professional in myself, you know, to find them out and show the world that, you know, it is what it is. And
do you think with all the postponements and the delays and, like, you know, the COVID and lawsuits and all the sort of stuff that happened and took months and months and months to get this fight off, do you think that had some kind of effect on him? Like that took him off his game in some way?
Not necessarily. I feel that he had even more time to prepare and to be super hungry and do his business. And he came ready. His body was looking great, made the weight look strong. But what I did is when this fight was postponed and I had to go back and quarantine for 2 weeks in Australia, you know, I said to myself that I'm going to get better every single day without a doubt. I'm going to get better and better and better. And that I did, you know, from the way I eat to the way I train to my sparring to my strength and conditioning, everything was going to be perfect because I knew that if I made everything perfect on his side, I knew he wouldn't be doing everything perfect and I would come away with a win.
Well, okay, so you know, moving forward, who do you personally want to fight next? What's your dream matchup? And I guess maybe more importantly, like who do you realistically think it will be? I mean, you're in a unique position in boxing, where you're with DiBello, right? So you're not stuck in having to fight within one of these promoter stables. Like you can move around and potentially fight any of these guys, I would think, right? So who do you want to get, and who do you think you're going to get?
Look, the most important thing is I'm the boss now, you know, regardless of anyone in my team or anyone I'm associated with, I'm the boss and I get to choose now what I want to do and who I want to fight. But there will be no tune-up fight. There will be no easy defense. I'm jumping straight in there with the next best guy. Now, they are all fighting over the next few weeks and they need to shine. They need to show. So at the moment, I'm fighting them all because I'm already studying these guys. I'm already writing my notes and seeing what they do good and what they don't do good. Now, they need to impress in their fights. And then from there, their promoters and their guys need to show me what they're looking at doing and what they're willing to do.
But who do you think you match up with best, though? Like, who's the best matchup for you, style-wise?
I love the Haney fight. I love the Lomachenko fight. I love the Tank Davis fight. I love the Ryan Garcia fight, but he needs to get active. But again, they need to do their thing. They need to handle their business first because they have fights and they can't look too far ahead. It will be one of these guys, 110%. There is no easy fight. There is no tune-up fight. And I think the fans respect that because I could easily go and have 2, 3, 4 tune-up fights and just fuck it up. But that is not a true warrior. You know, these warriors and these fighters, you know, that excites me. You know, I need that excitement against another great warrior. And even the Lopez fight, you know, the rematch, you know, it could be there, but I know that they want nothing to do with me, but it could be there if they wanted it. But, you know, we keep doing what we're doing and it's all going to present itself, you know, very, very soon.
I mean, it's such a stacked division. Like, you know, when you think of Haney, Davis, Garcia, Teofimo Lopez, Lomachenko, you, Jojo Diaz, you know, Shakur Stevenson possibly moving up, all you guys maybe moving up to 140. I mean, there's like years of fight combinations that could and should happen. But for whatever you do next, like, is that going to fuck you up mentally at all to go into it being the A side in Australia, fighting in front of tens of thousands of people on your home turf? Like, how are you? That's got to be a difference. You've never had that, right? Like, how's that going to affect you going into the next fight?
My hunger doesn't change. I train this morning. I continue training. I'll train again tonight. People can't believe I'm training in the gym here in Vegas. They go, "You're mad. You just had a fight of the year. You know, you got your cuts on your eye, but
you're back in the gym now."
I'm back in the gym. I trained this morning already. I'm training. I'm back in the gym. I love this sport. I live for this sport. And with or without the belts, with or without, you know, this big success now and you know, the world has not stopped talking. I stay true to what I believe and perfect in my craft. That is the ultimate warrior. You know, if I take that step down now, if I slow up, then I know that I'm closer to my defeat. And I'm here to reign for a long time. You know, there is no slowing down. I will continue doing what I'm doing. A side, B side, you know, whatever money comes this way, you know, I stay focused and do what I do best in the gym. And that's be in the dark and continue grinding.
So let's talk about Australia. Like what I've, you know, my band has toured down there many, many times over the years. I love Australia.
And we love you guys down there.
It's great. I mean, it's always been a home away from home for the Foo Fighters for sure. But it seems like boxing is really popular down there and there's a real Australian homegrown boxing scene. Like what's that scene like?
Yeah, it is growing by the minute. And now my victory there has just changed the whole landscape because now it presents for us to go back and fill out 80,000 people in Melbourne or Sydney. You know, we have some stadiums and arenas and we come out for the fights. The whole Australia is celebrating. Obviously I'm a proud Greek as well. They are celebrating. And, you know, this creates opportunity now for my promotional company, you know, for us to promote promotions and the young fighters that I have with me, you know, to get that opportunity that I didn't have at the start of my career. You know, I had to come from the local show, the club show where you walk in there and, you know, you can smell the smoke from everyone on the pokies and the bistro. And, you know, you go in there and there's a handful of people and you've sold tickets and getting a little bit of commission. And I've had to really earn it from the hard way. But for me now to be able to present this opportunity to these younger guys that are with me, that's amazing. And that landscape now has definitely changed in Australia. I tell you, 80,000 people, you know, is going to be incredible and we will do them numbers.
Who were the guys like when you were a kid and you were first like getting into boxing? Who were like the local Australian fighters that you looked up to or maybe even mentored you or were an influence?
Yeah, look, you had some great fighters. You know, one of my sparring partners for this training camp, Lenny Zappavigna, was an absolute warrior. You know, you had Michael Katsidis, who had unbelievable fights here in America. You know, another warrior, another Greek. You know, you had Anthony Mundine, you know, Danny Green.
Right. I know Danny Green. I've hung with him. He worked me out one time out in Perth.
They're great guys, you know, guys that have helped, you know, the landscape in Australia. But, you know, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened in Australian boxing. And, you know, it's an honor. And they knew it would happen. I knew it would happen because they knew how hard I worked. They knew the work ethic that I had. And, you know, they said if it had to be anyone, it was going to be you.
Well, yeah. Are there any like guys that you came up with that are like, you know, hometown rivals for you? Like anybody any scores you're going to go settle now? You know, the way that Mundine and Danny Green had like that rivalry, you know what I mean? Is there anybody line up like that for you down there?
No, I settled all that when I was fighting in Australia, you know, okay. There was some good rivalries and, you know, I beat them guys. I cleaned out my division in Australia and that's the right way to do it. You clean out your backyard first before you get overseas. And that's what I did. Now, there is nobody. And look, anyone that's going to get a shot, like I said, they got to earn it. They really got to deserve it because I know how hard I've had to go through and what I've had to go through. You know, we are looking for the big fish now and the big names.
Well, you know, like I said, I love Australia and I couldn't do this interview without asking you. You said you live in Sydney. Do you surf? And if not, why?
I don't surf. I do not surf. I need to obviously try it, but I'm so worried about sharks. I'm always on the water. I'm always on the water.
You'll get in the ring with Teofimo Lopez, but you're worried about sharks. Come on, man.
I'll fight anybody. You know, when I'm in that ocean, even when I do go to the beach, I'm very wary. I won't go past my, my abs. You know,
you got to think about it though. Like, I always tell this to fighters because I surf and I love to surf and I particularly love surfing all over Australia. It's like when we go on tour down there, we always have like two or three days off between shows. And it's in Australian tours for me is like, it's like a surf trip with like a couple of shows sprinkled into it. But I always say like surfing it's perfect. Nobody does this, but it's perfect cross training for boxing because the stance is the same. It's all like high output. Recover, high output, recover. It's like, you know, you have to deal with like panicking when you're getting held down by, you know, it's all the same variables. So next time we come down there, if you're around, I'm going to take you surfing. If you're up for it.
You're going to have to show me the surfing, but I'm always on the water. I'm a big fishing fanatic. I love being on the water.
Oh, nice. Let's go fish.
You know, that's what we'll definitely do. We'll go for a fish.
Yeah,
surfboard, and you'll show me the ropes there.
Well, dude, it was so great talking to you. I just, you know, there's nothing better than an upset, even if maybe to you it wasn't an upset because you knew it was going to happen. But to the rest of us, great upset, great fight, amazing. You made history. I hope you continue to do more of the same, and good luck to you, man.
Absolute pleasure to chat with you, and you know, looking forward to seeing you in Australia real soon.
We got to get you out to a show. As soon as they let us back in, man, we'll be back.
I would love that. It'll be fantastic. Thank you.
Awesome, man. Take care. George Kambosos Jr. on Walking the Floor. What a great story. He went from like virtually unknown fighter to like all the belts and hanging out with Joe Rogan and, you know, just wow, just great. Wish him the best. And we will be back in a week or two or three or five. I don't know, man. I'm pretty lazy when it comes to my podcasting schedule this day, but we will be back at some point. Don't you worry about that. Until then, adios, amigos!